Thank you, Steve.
We are speechless for a moment.
You know, Wendy just informed me that our friend Steve Bertrand may be coming into a very large sum of money tonight.
Oh, could happen.
It could happen.
You're the bracket boy.
Well, it's between Darlis and me. And, I mean, clearly Andrea had a lot of help picking out her teams.
Oh, gosh, don't say that.
The two of you are exactly tied, right?
No, we're not tied.
It depends which way it goes.
Oh, so which team needs to win for you to win the money?
North Carolina.
Okay.
And she went Gonzaga.
She went Gonzaga.
It all comes down to that. And roughly, could we say about how much money is at stake?
I'm told $292,000.
Oh, okay. That's a lot of money.
Or shy of 200.
All right.
Oh, that's not bad. I never do the brackets. Do you, Bill?
Never.
I think we're the only ones that don't.
Yeah.
I wish you had. I'd be up another 20.
Is it too late, Steve, to jump in on this?
No. I'll tell you what. Give me the cash. I'll set you up.
All right.
You just whispered something in our ear in between traffic and you wrapping up your news hunk. What was that, Steve?
I watched Birdman over the weekend to look for Daryl Hall.
You're a jerk.
Or John Oates.
You don't even know which one it is.
I'm not a jerk. I meant to talk to you off the air about this.
All right.
On Friday, John Oates was with Wendy and me in the last hour when we did the stream. And what a nice man he is. You know, not just a legend in the world of music, but a really genuinely nice guy. So right before we had him on, Steve said, hey, you know what you might want to bring up is he has a cameo in the movie Birdman. And both of us were like, wait, does he? And Steve reminded us that it was a scene where Michael Keaton walks outside and he runs into John Oates. And there's some exchange between the two of them. But in my head, I'm like, I don't remember that.
But hang on one second, because Bill, you said I didn't really like that movie, so I may have missed it. And here's how the power of suggestion works for me.
Yeah.
I said, oh my God, was Michael Keaton's running naked and he saw John Oates and said something like, hey, that's John Oates. And Bertrand's like, exactly.
Yeah, but Wendy, you remember the scene exactly the way I remember it. So I still think that's what I wanted to talk to you about. It must have happened somewhere in some other show. Where he was in front of a theater.
Where Michael Keaton was naked?
John Oates got out of a car and someone ran into him. Because we have the same memory of the scene. And
yeah,
we didn't talk about it.
I know, but I trust too many people.
But how would you have come up with that same scenario? You came up with the same scene that I was talking about and I hadn't described it.
But Steve, you at some point, you said to John Oates on Friday,
right.
Hey, you know what I remember is you in this movie.
So I'm getting ready to do the business lunch, and you guys are talking about it, and I know he's in the green room, so I pop in, I'm like, hey, can you hear what they're saying? He goes, no, and I said, oh, hey, I'm Steve, welcome, blah, blah, blah. I said, yeah, they don't remember that you were in Birdman.
He says, neither do I.
And he goes, I wasn't in Birdman. I'm like, really? He goes, if I didn't get paid, I would have remembered. And I said, I could have sworn you were in Birdman. And so, you know, he was nice about it, and we chit-chatted about a couple of other things. So, I mean, I'm so convinced I can see this scene. I go back in my office, and I find the scene on YouTube. I watch the whole scene. Watch Michael Keaton get his robe stuck in a door, drops his robe, runs around the theater into the front
door. Spoiler alert.
Well, and I'm like, this is it. There's no guy getting out of a car. But I remember it so clearly.
You both remember it, but it didn't happen.
I don't remember him getting out of a car. I just thought he was waiting there to see the play.
Yeah.
And Keaton runs by, and he's like, oh, there's John Oates. It's something like that.
So after I watch it, I go back in the green room. I'm like, hey, I just watched the scene. You're not in it.
Was he shocked to find out that he wasn't in it?
I said, was there anything you were in? And by then, he kind of wanted me to leave the room.
Well, he talked about this on the air and said that he was hurt because not only did you misremember him, but there was no one there. So do you remember he was offended? Should I be more offended that there was no one in the scene?
Right.
Am I no one?
Right. He seemed very put off by it all, Steve.
He was almost frightened. He was
right
a
on
nice
the edge
guy.
Of fright.
Yeah, I still am convinced I saw him do that somewhere.
So something similar to that must have happened somewhere, but you can't place where, obviously.
I can remember the TV show. The tone of the other actors, like, oh, I ran into John Oates.
And when you relayed that to him, it didn't sound familiar to him?
No, by then I think he was willing.
Angry?
No, he just was a little uncomfortable.
Well, now I owe you an apology because I guess you weren't trying to sabotage our interview.
No.
And it was funny because we went as a family to the Hawks game on Friday. Great game.
Yeah.
And on the way there in the car, I said, who saw Birdman? And Jimmy Mack says, I did. And I said, so there's this part where Michael Keaton's running naked and he acknowledges John Oates. And Jim kind of just said, I'm not... I don't know that I remember that, but I hated that movie.
Yeah.
And Michael and Dylan didn't even see it. And I said, well, I guess it didn't happen. And Bertrand is a jerk. Because no, I thought you did this intentionally.
No, I wouldn't do that.
Because, oh, yes, you would.
No, I wouldn't. Well, maybe I would, but I didn't. So that's why when during Crosstalk, I said, hey, he's got a great story to tell about the movie. It was mine that it just happened.
It's also kind of disturbing, you know, any other radio station in the green room, they play the show that you're about to be on to just kind of prepare you for what's coming next.
Yeah, no, they got Maury on.
Yeah, they show Maury in our green room.
That's got it. Listen, I know that WGN TV is on, and yeah, that's fine, and kind of our sister station, and everything's good, but some... That happens in here as well. And when Maury comes on, I can't stand it. I have to just...
It's very distracting.
I'd rather just look at us in the little Brady Bunch windows.
I know.
To make sure my hair's not sticking up. That I can't watch Maury.
Are they doing that as if to say to any guests that we're about to have on, you may want to rethink this? That this is what we're putting out there and you're going to be a part of it. Are you sure you want to do this? Is that why they're not playing our show in the green room?
I don't know what they're doing.
Because every other radio station I've ever been at, that's what goes on in the green room is you get to hear the show. So then you know kind of the tone of the show, you know, and you can jump in on something.
How embarrassing for you guys, though. He would have heard you talking about how he was in Birdman.
He would have walked away.
Well,
I'm not doing this.
He would have heard you say how he was in Birdman. Right. We didn't really agree with you.
No matter how you slice it, I guess we wouldn't have ended up looking good. So it played out fine.
And Jesus from The Walking Dead, Tom Payne, is that
Tom
his
Payne.
Name? He heard us talking before, so I don't know if he was listening on the stream or what.
He had headphones on.
So, oh, he did?
Yeah. So he, yeah.
He's smart.
Yeah. He came
and he didn't walk away?
No.
Wow.
No.
We must be better than we think.
I don't know.
Is it Friday yet?
No, we got a couple more days till Friday. All right, stick around. There's all kinds of things coming up on the show. We're thrilled that you're listening. And if you want to jump in, you certainly can at 312-981-7200. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN. We're at 312-981-7200. That's how you call us. You can text us there as well. We had a special visitor before the show today, a very, very pleasant lady.
All right, Kevin's mother-in-law came in.
That's right.
And I was listening specifically as to what you called her, Kevin, because I just know when I was dating Jimmy Mack, I would talk to his parents. It was always Mr. and Mrs. Mack and Ernie.
The whole dating process, that's what you refer to them as, right?
Yeah. So then once we got engaged, you know, she's like, you can call me Annette. And I said, it's weird.
Oh.
And then
you
I
can't
tried
turn
it.
Down that. If she offers that, you have to accept.
I know, but it was just, you know, like when you see an old neighbor from when you were growing up, don't you still call them Mr. Yeah. and Mrs. stuff? It's hard to change that.
I had a couple of teachers in grade school that became friends of my mom's, and they said, you don't have to call us Mrs. or, you know, whatever their name. And I go, yeah, I do.
See what
I
mean? I
can't really change that.
And it's what you're used to saying. So I was used to saying Mr. and Mrs. McInerney, and then, you know, I guess I waited till we got married, and then I remember the first time I said it, you know.
You said mom
Annette,
or dad or
their names.
Or, yeah.
And then it's not weird anymore.
Would it have been weirder if your mother or father-in-law said, from now on, would you call us mom and dad?
I wouldn't do that.
I couldn't have done that either.
I had one mom and dad, and that's it.
Yeah. When Reese and Kylie were born, my father-in-law said, you can now start calling me grandpa. And I said, but you're not my grandpa, because he's not. He's my father-in-law. And he said,
you are
no,
so
but,
technical.
But now that I am grandfather to your child... You and the kids should call me grandpa, but
not
I,
you.
No, I shouldn't.
Although I have to admit, there are so many Jim McInerneys in the McInerney family that I feel weird calling my father-in-law the name of my husband.
Oh, that would be weird.
So I say I just call him Papa because that's what the kids call him.
Yeah.
So I'm like, hey, Papa, and
oh,
I do it in kind of a cute little way. Hi, Papa.
How does he feel? About
he likes
that?
It.
I guess. All right.
And it's funny because, you know, we asked him, what do you want the kids to call you?
Yeah.
Because this was their first grandchild, Michael was. And it's like, what do you want him to call you? Grandpa?
Mm-hmm.
Grandpappy? What do you want? And he's like, I don't know, whatever they say. And we kind of said, well, Papa's kind of cute. And he's like, yeah, I like it. So it was Papa for many years. And then a couple years later, they signed a birthday card for Michael. And it was love, Grandma and Grandpa. Grandpa. And I'm like, he's not Grandpa. You can't just change it. There.
Does he prefer that it's Grandpa not saying anything?
It was just one card one time, and it's never happened again.
Oh. You referred to your mother-in-law by her name.
I honestly don't remember.
I don't think you said anything. You just went, oh, hey.
No, he did, because when she walked past the window and waved, I waved back, and I thought I knew that it was Kevin's mother-in-law, and you came in, and I said, is that? And you said, it's
Esra.
Esra.
Yeah. Yeah, but you didn't say that to her. You said it to us about her.
I didn't realize I was under the microscope, first of all, and no, I don't.
I observe everything.
Apparently.
I bought you hair product.
You should.
I own you.
Kevin calls, how weird is this? He calls his mother-in-law Esra and his father-in-law better than Esra. Isn't that crazy? Why would you do that, Kevin? It seems like you're playing favorites.
You're going to get me in trouble. No, I didn't even think about it. I don't know what I called her, honestly. I don't remember.
You did. You said Esra.
Okay.
I remember. Yeah.
I don't think you said anything.
Just to me.
Hey, you? I don't think I did that either.
When she was walking by, who's that? You said her name, but to her face, I think you just said, hey. What's going on?
I can't remember your name.
Well, it's just awkward.
This is comfortable for Kevin,
No, considering she's in the building still, I'm sure she's hearing all this. Yeah. It's not awkward at all.
What a nice, I'm not just saying this because she's in the building. What an incredibly nice lady. And several people commented on this. Very attractive.
Yeah, we got to keep Cochran away from her.
Yeah. He was the first one.
Yes.
And he's working on blood clots in his lungs. He can't be breathing heavy, but he saw her. He's like that. Yeah, calm down.
When Jimmy Mack met Esra at your wedding, he was taken aback at her beauty, and he just found himself saying,
how you doing?
No, he did not say that. Thank God my husband had it all together. He just goes, wow, you are glamorous.
And so, I remember that.
Yes, and then she kept teasing him all night long, like, here's my glamorous daughter, here's my glamorous son-in-law.
But it was the perfect word.
It was.
She's
and
very glamorous.
It's factual.
She's very glamorous.
Yeah, she's beautiful, absolutely.
Yeah.
They're good-looking people.
That bodes well for your wife.
Well, she's beautiful, too. Yeah.
Yeah, everyone in the family is beautiful. I even pointed out Kevin's the ugliest guy in the family.
He did say that. I am here to tell the truth.
Well, I can handle that. That's fine. I think the same.
Our little Kevin was on the air yesterday at what time? Six?
6 to 9, in for Brian Noonan yesterday, yep.
Very good.
Did you know that was coming, or was that a last-minute thing?
No, we had a couple weeks to prepare this time, which is good.
Then what was your excuse?
Walked right into it, dang.
You are spunky this Monday morning. You really are. Did you get in a lot of tennis this weekend?
I played some tennis this weekend. You know what's frustrating? Here's what's frustrating. We've talked about this on the show every once in a while, where you get a song in your head, right? Now, normally when a song is in your head, you know what that song is. So I think that helps you diffuse it. Like if you have a song in your head and you know it, you say to yourself, well, I'm just going to stop humming that Dexy's Midnight Runner song. I'm going to expel it from my brain. Well, starting Friday on my way home, a song popped in my head that not only do I not, I can't lose it, but everybody who I come up to with any knowledge of music, I like hum a little bit of the song to them, and they all do what Kevin did this morning, which is say, you've made that song up. That song doesn't exist.
All right, let's
give
try
us
it
a
on
bit,
me.
Yeah.
All right. It's a fairly contemporary song. Now, I don't know any of the lyrics. It's been out in the last year or two.
Then I won't know it.
No, it's not like that. It's na 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 na.
Now you see why I didn't know it.
Does that sound even remotely familiar? I have no idea what it is. Now, in the old days, when there used to be record stores, because when I'd get a song like that in my head, I was like, I would like to buy that record, or later a cassette, or then later a CD.
So you go sing that to the clerk?
I would go into a record store, and I'd go, hey, what is this song? And then I would do what I just did, not with that song, but with a different song. And more times than not, they would know it. They'd go, oh, yeah, I know what that is, and they would take me to it.
I'm pretty awesome at Name That Tune. I mean, like, really awesome. Like, if they bring that back on TV, I would kick royal ass.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever heard that.
I'm telling you, it was top 40s sometime in the last year or two, and it used to get heavy airplay, and I don't know any of the lyrics.
Male or female?
It's guys. It's one guy primarily singing lead vocals, and then other guys chime in who are in the band, not just passersby. But it's been in my head since Friday. And, I've come in contact with various friends, and I go, I know this is a weird thing. I just have to ask you. I know this is crazy.
Don't you enjoy it, kind of, though? Like, kind of picks at your brain? Because you know you'll get it eventually.
I will get it eventually, And then I ended up listening to so much radio over the weekend in hopes that that song would just be on magically. And I'd go, oh, yeah, there's my answer.
A couple of quick guesses. Perhaps right. they recognized it. Mike, you think you identified the song Bill was humming?
Hi, Wendy and Bill. Yeah, man. Hey, hey, hey. It's the Fat Albert
it's
theme.
It's not the Fat Albert theme.
Na, 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 na,
no, that's
na,
different.
Na, 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 na.
That's the Fat Albert thing. It's not the Fat Albert
thing. You gotta get it going.
All right, thank you, Mike. You're wrong, but you made
us
laugh.
Mike, thank you for...
Oh, sorry.
I know it's not the Fat Albert
thing. Adam, you know what it is, isn't it?
I was going with the Star Wars thing.
No, it's not Star Wars.
It's contemporary, he said.
Am I that bad of a hummer? I must be.
I'm not answering their question. Maybe Bertrand can.
I married later in life. It's not this. I know it's not this.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Well, thanks for trying,
Thank
Adam.
Thank you, Adam.
Thanks for trying to help me out.
I don't know what... One more time, because right, it does sound time. Familiar.
Na, 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 na.
It sounded different to me that time.
No, that's the same.
Okay.
It's the same one. It has been in my head nonstop since Friday afternoon, and I'm even thinking I should call Kevin up, but I mean... I knew
it. He would think something is wrong. You never call him.
I know.
Is it the, I can't think of that song.
What?
Wait, I'll hum a little
All
of
right,
it.
All right, let's do that. Let's do that.
I really feel like I sort of.
It's driving me crazy.
All right, well, maybe somebody knows. 312-981-7200. You can call us or text us. Because
we've already eliminated the Fat Albert theme, the theme from Star Wars. So that only leaves about 13 million songs it could possibly be.
And the only way to get rid of the earworm is to give it to someone else.
Yes.
Because you mentioned Dexy's Midnight Runners. Dexy's Midnight Runners. You runner?
Runners.
Yes.
Plural.
Come On, Eileen. I love that song, and it was totally in the trailer for The Preacher, which is coming back in June. So that was on all night during The Walking Dead. Yeah. So that's why you pulled that out of your butt today.
No, because I fast-forwarded through the commercials during Walking Dead, so I didn't get to see it. I didn't see any of the trailers.
Well, then you're a forensic or a psychic
something.
Like that.
I'm one of those. A break must be taken, and then some news, and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Thank you, Steve. We appreciate it. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And I like to spend a lot of time tooling around on Facebook, because I got to be honest with you, the internet really helps make planning a radio show much easier than it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
Because you get a lot of ideas out there. I saw this on Huffington Post. Maybe I saw it on Scary Mommy or Good Housekeeping. I can't remember. But there's a plan out there to help your teenage son or daughter. Now, let me clarify by saying, when I was a teenager, I don't feel like I gave in to peer pressure. I feel kids give into it a lot these days. Mm-hmm. I have a senior in high school who hasn't had a drink yet. Some of his friends have. And I said, is that weird when somebody offers you a drink? And he says, no, I just say I don't want it. I have a 14-year-old who's going to be in these situations. There's a great new plan. It's called the X Plan. I already told my kids about it. And the guy who came up with the X Plan is here to explain it to all of us. He's a teacher, a speaker, a business owner, manager, a writer, musician, and founder and director of Empty Stone Ministry. You also said you're a knucklehead. Is that fair to say, Bert?
Wendy, that is so fair to say.
Bert Folks is on the line with us. Now, Bert, why don't you give a brief example of what this X Plan is? And I thank you for it. I already explained it to my kids, and we're ready to use it when necessary. Why don't you explain it?
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, the general premise behind it is finding a way to use technology to give our kids a hand when they might need a way out of a rough situation. So, you know, the way it would work, let's say that I drop my son off at a friend's house or for a party or whatever, and if things start happening that he's not comfortable with in any way, shape, or form, all he has to do is text anyone in our family the letter X. Whoever gets that X, they know that then they give Danny a call, and they just say, Danny, something's come up. I'm coming to get you. Be ready to go in 5 minutes. And then Danny can look at his friends and say, hey, something's come up. My dad's coming to get me. I got to go. So that gets him out of the situation, lets him save face with his friends. There's a couple of caveats that we have with it. The deal we have is that should he ever throw up that white flag and we have to rescue him, there are no questions asked. He can talk to us or explain, or he can say whatever he wants, but he knows we're not going to interrogate him.
Which is key, because if you, you know, if they're throwing up that white flag, as you mentioned, and you come get them, what the heck was going on? Who was there? What was going on? They may not send you that white flag again.
Oh, exactly. Exactly. And you know, I know all kids are different. All parents are different. You know, we're pretty blessed with our relationship because we rarely have to ask our kids anything. They come to us to talk about things. You know, we're pretty honest and open and frank with them. The one condition on all of that, however, is we've always taught our kids that, you know, you are your brother's keeper. So if that situation is dangerous for Danny and it's dangerous for someone else, he's got to say something. You know, he has a moral obligation to stand up for someone that is in a potentially bad situation. And once he gives us that information, then it's totally on us, and then we do what's necessary.
Bert, this sounds like such a great plan, the X plan. Is the version of it that exists right now today the version you came up with originally, or did you have to fine-tune this a little bit as time went on?
No. This is something that we had in place. And, you know, the reason I wrote about it is I speak once a week with a group of kids going through an addiction recovery program. And I asked them one day, you know, have you guys ever found yourself in a situation that was just uncomfortable and you wish you'd had a way out? Every one of those kids raised their hands. And, you know, I thought, man. So we talked about it and I explained how it works in our family. And I had one young lady raise her hand and she said, "You have no idea how much I wish my family had something like this."
That's got to make you feel good.
Yeah. You know, I've heard from people. I mean, first of all, it's funny. I have my wife read everything I write before I put it out there. And, you know, she read this and she goes, "Well, honey, if you put this out there, won't that screw it up for Danny?"
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you. Now that everybody knows about this X plan, if a kid is at a party and all of a sudden they feel the call from a parent and then they hang up and go, "Yeah, something happened at home. My dad's picking me up right now." Don't they know? Isn't this too broad now?
Oh, it's so funny because it's possible. You know, and when Laura said that to me, I just laughed and I said, "Honey, I had 75,000 readers last year, and that's it. Nobody's going to see this."
Yeah, right.
What about if they need help immediately? Can you use more than one X to signify there's trouble immediately? Come right now, triple X.
You know, you can do anything. And then that's the thing about this that I've been so encouraged by is I really don't care if parents use this specific plan or anything else they come up with. I know a lot of folks have code words they use with their kids. The important thing is that parents realize what's out there and what their kids are facing on a daily basis, and they're having these conversations with their kids. That's the crucial thing. You know, if they're opening up those lines of communication and the kid knows, "Wow, mom and dad have my back," man, that's going to go a long way.
Yeah.
What if this is something that happens every weekend and these kids are hanging out with the same kids? Isn't it going to look weird?
You know what? First of all, my kid has never used this. So he hasn't had to, because really he's a pretty good decision maker. I have three kids, and then I'm talking about my youngest here. He kind of has the potential to go astray more than the other two.
That's what the youngest of the family always is. I was the youngest of the family. How old is your baby?
He's 14.
Okay, so that's right at the age where this is all happening.
Yeah, exactly. If it's a habitual situation, you're constantly rescuing your kid, you need to have a conversation about that. You need to figure out why they keep putting themselves in that situation. And, you know, a lot of this comes down to just another avenue for parenting opportunities. You know, you're teaching your kids about social skills, and you're teaching them about integrity and how to stand up for themselves and how to stand up for others. And some, you know, so every discussion you have is just a teachable moment.
In one of the articles I read, a question was thrown your way about this doesn't really teach a kid to stand up for themselves because it's kind of teaching them how to bail themselves out of a situation. What are your thoughts on that?
I get that. I see where folks are coming from. I don't think that's the case. You know, all kids are different,
right?
You know, and that's the thing to realize, that they're all going to handle these kind of situations differently. And I would much rather, if my kid is unsure, I would much rather him reach out to me for help. And then we can have those discussions and we can talk about, you know, how to stand up for yourself. Some people have asked me, well, what do they say when they go to school the next day and everyone's asking, well, what happened to you last night? What happened? Where'd you go? What was going on? And, you know, that's a baby step opportunity for your kid to learn to step up, because they can look that friend in the eye and they can very confidently say, you know, I'd rather not talk about it.
Bert, even if this is a means of finding a way to bail yourself out instead of stand up to something, I'd be okay with that. Sometimes you need to be bailed out. Everybody does.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. One comment I saw on my blog, and gosh, there have been hundreds and hundreds, but one I saw, a guy had said, well, if you teach your kids to not hang out with losers, they won't be in these situations.
Oh, please.
Well, and it's, how naive can you be? I don't know how things are in Chicago. I can guess, but here in Huntington, West Virginia, you know, we are heroin central right now.
It's bad here too. I can't understand it.
Oh my God! Our little town. We lead the nation in drug addicted babies.
God.
So it's very real, and I've already been to too many funerals for kids. And I'm not talking about the quote-unquote losers. You know, I have a good friend who's a vice president of a bank. His wife's a teacher. Great family. They're involved in youth sports, pillars of the community, just a phenomenal, supportive family. Their son tried heroin. They buried him 2 years ago. So, I mean, this is hit. It's everywhere. And our kids are facing stuff on a daily basis that, you know, there's an urgency to talk to our kids about this, because it's not like when we were growing up. It's not like sneaking a beer at Billy's house anymore.
No, and that's what I'm saying. When we first introduced you, I didn't feel like I needed to give in to peer pressure. Quite honestly, I was the kid, if somebody goes, hey, do you want a beer? I'd be like, yeah, you know, and I don't know if that's a good or bad thing, but that's how I was. But a beer seems so harmless in comparison to what's out there these days.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's frightening. It is truly frightening. There's and my kids come home and tell me every day, they see it every single day in their schools. You know, kids around them are using. And we talk a lot about the drug situation, but it's more than that. You know, if my teenage daughter goes out on a first date and she's with a fine young gentleman that she thinks everything's going to be okay, you know, you never know when something's going to come up in that arena that she's not comfortable with and needs a way out. So it's not always just drugs.
It's a great plan. It's called the X Plan, and the guy who put it together, his name is Bert Falks, F-U-L-K-S. You can go to bertfalks.com, B-E-R-T-F-U-L-K-S.com. Quick question for you. As I was explaining this to my kids, I said, really, if you're ever in a situation that you want help getting out of, just text me an X, and then I will call you immediately. And then, obviously, you have to give me the address of where you are, and I'm going to come get you. Well, here's my question. What if they tell you they're at one kid's house, and then when the X plan comes over your text messages, and you say, okay, where am I picking you up? What happens then? I know you go pick up the kid, but but is there still a don't discuss rule there?
It's different for every family. In our family, that's part of the deal, no questions asked, because I don't want my kid to stick around in a bad situation because he's afraid of punishment when he gets home.
I'm kind of thankful both my boys sing like a canary. They can't. They have a difficult time lying, which is good for me.
Right.
But I have also made the mistake of saying, you know, anything you want to know about drugs or sex or rock and roll, go ahead and ask me or Dad. We'll give you the facts about it. And I'm kind of regretting telling them that, because some of the questions I get from my 14-year-old son are crazy. But I answer them as best I can.
Wendy, God bless you for it.
Bert, if I'm at a party at Wolverine's house and things get out of hand, do I text X-Men? How does that work?
I hope you have your own superpowers if you hang out with those guys.
Yeah, I guess. All right.
Well, thank you for talking with us. This article's all over the place. I think I saw it on Scary Mommy, but also Huffington Post had it. And go to his website. It's bertfulks.com, BERTFULKS.com. Thank you so much for coming up with an idea, because all we are really supposed to do as parents is love our kids and try our best. And, you know, every day is different.
Yeah, amen to that. Absolutely. Thanks for having me. It was great chatting with you. And got to say, I was in Chicago for the first time in my life about a week ago. Awesome town, awesome people. Had a wonderful time.
Thanks, Bert. We
Thank
love
you
hearing
so
that.
Much.
Take care of yourself.
Hey, thanks, guys.
It's Bert Fulks, everybody.
You cannot be texting your wife, X, to get you out of work early.
I've tried.
I know. You can't leave early to go play tennis.
All right.
All right.
I have attempted
break.
It.
I know. 312-981-7200. It's Bill Left, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN. Thank you very much.
It's good for your outer ecosystem.
It is, actually.
It is.
It really is.
It is good for everything.
All right. We were talking to Bert Fulks, and I had read about his X plan, where if your kid is at a party or at a friend's house and something weird or uncomfortable happens and they don't know how to get out of the situation, they just text you or your husband or wife or brother or sister, text an X. That's what the kid's going to text. If you get an X on your phone from your kid, you call them immediately and say... You texted me that.
I did. I texted you an X. I need to be rescued.
Now I have to call you.
I need to go ahead, but I'm not
in. I can't
rescue
you from me.
Oh.
You're stuck with
I guess,
me. Right. You should text Kevin.
Kevin, I'm going to text you the letter X soon. Come and rescue me.
How do I do that?
But if you
tell
see,
me there's business. Tell me that there's some business. That
right. You call immediately if you get an X from your kid and you say, you know what? Something happened at home. I need to come pick you up. Give me your address. I'll be out in front in 5 minutes. And
right.
That gives a kid an escape. I thought of a good one. I could say, oh, my God, Tiki ran away. I need to pick you up. We have to go look for him.
Oh, that is good. That's convincing.
It is. So Tracy has called 312-981-7200. Hi, Tracy. We only have a minute here. You had a comment.
Oh, I was just saying, if a kid needed to get out of a situation where I think it's completely bailable is when they have, say that there's the parents of the kid that they're hanging out with is partying up, you know, and in a situation where either they feel uncomfortable or worse, they were going to drive them back home to my child back home to my house. I would say, yes, the kid should absolutely, my son should absolutely bail and involve me because it's not his responsibility to step up and call it and say, you know, I'm uncomfortable here because your parents are drinking.
Right. That's a great example. Are you going to put this X plan into effect in your life?
Absolutely. I actually saw it. Someone posted it on the Facebook, so I already did it because I thought it was a great idea.
The funny thing is all of our kids know about this X plan now, so right. When we come to pick up our kids, that's going to blow their cover.
I know. That's the problem.
Well, I thought about that too, but I'm just really, I'm certain that there's instances that kids have to get picked up because something happened. So,
right. I agree.
Kids got to be able to at least handle that because we're willing to come in and pull them out of that situation, which is, it's a better call than staying in it. I
Absolutely.
Think. And,
yeah. All right. Yeah. Well, happy, safe parenting to you, Tracy.
And it's your 80% of your immune system lives in your gut.
Yeah, that's true, too.
That's right.
It's good for your inner ecosystem. Thank you, Tracy.
Thanks, Tracy.
Wow, she knew that like nothing. That was easy.
Hey, I don't lie.
No, I
but
know.
I do run late occasionally.
Well, hey, Bill, bad news. What's wrong? Wendy, we got me and Bill got to go.
Yeah.
We got business.
You don't get yourself out of the situation. You're just supposed to save Bill.
I'm saving him.
I texted Kevin the letter X, too.
You two
Steve,
you've are got one smooth
coming soon too.
As silk. Can I tell you that?
I got a capital G and I don't know what to do with it.
I don't even get that.
I don't know what that means.
All right, we have to take a break. Bertrand, we're late. Sorry. It's John Oates' fault. Thank you.
Steve, thanks so much. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. Call us or text us at 312-981-7200. You know what I love, Wendy, is a good celebrity feud. I love when famous people don't get along and they take jabs at each other.
I don't really care.
You don't like it?
You know what? I've decided I don't care anymore about celebrities.
What? Wendy, they're the most important people on the planet.
What else is there?
You have to care about celebrities.
I don't really care about them anymore. I like hearing about it,
this
I guess,
hurts.
But
sad,
I'm not going to.
It is so sad.
I feel
gonna,
for her, Bill.
Yeah. What can we do? What can your friends do? Text me the letter X. I'll come and help. I'll help you.
Shut up.
Let's get a celebrity on the phone right now.
Yes, to show you the way.
Well, celebrities are people too, you know.
I like the good celebrities, but there are, you know, the word celebrity is too broad now.
You mean because like on a show called Dancing with the Stars, there's only one or maybe two stars? Is that what you mean? Is that what you're saying?
I just mean like Kardashian.
Yeah.
Can I say more?
They ruined it for everybody.
If I may just say, and I told you this off the air, I was waiting in line at Walgreens yesterday and there was a woman next to me, maybe a couple years older than me, mm-hmm. but we're definitely in the same period of identifying celebrities. Mm-hmm. We're looking at all the tabloids. I'm lifting them up, reading the headlines. Jennifer Aniston is on one. Mm-hmm. And the lady says to me, boy, it's getting bad when I don't even recognize the celebrities on the celebrity magazines. And it's true.
That
some of them,
sad.
Other than Jennifer Aniston, were like, I don't know, the flip 'em divorce, the house, the flip. Somebody said that looks like you.
Yeah, that's not me. That guy does kind of look like me.
He does a little bit.
Yeah.
I don't know who they are, really. I've heard of them.
Would you agree there are some people that are famous just for being famous?
Yes.
Right?
Yes, of course I would
Isn't
agree.
Isn't that crazy? It's true, though. There are people, but it's always been that way. Like, I remember when I was a kid, if I'd watched the Match Game, Brett Summers was famous for being famous.
Well, see, right. So there are people who were famous for what they did at one moment.
Right.
And then they stay in the public eye the rest of their
Forever.
Lives somehow.
Jack Vallance, is that his name? Bruce Vallance?
Bruce Vallance.
What the heck did he ever do?
He wrote the Oscars.
Yeah, he was a comedy writer who was often a joke writer on the Oscars. Right. But you're right. Why would he be on Hollywood Squares
when there's
real celebrities that should be using that square?
And get a new haircut.
Elizabeth Taylor for the last 30 years of her life.
Well, she's Elizabeth Taylor. She deserves to remain famous.
She was living off of legacy. She was living off of, you know, the better year.
Violet Eyes.
Cleopatra years. She did have violet eyes and a huge
That's
rock.
A Hall & Oates song right there, Violet Eyes, isn't
Look
it?
Look into your violet eyes.
She deserves to remain a celebrity, don't you think?
Well,
be
not
honest.
Anymore. I mean,
if you achieve as much as Elizabeth Taylor achieved.
I don't know, but late in her life, you would see her everywhere.
With Michael
Jackson.
And she'd
be selling things. And it's like, you know, okay, I don't think she doesn't deserve to be a celebrity.
Right.
But she hadn't done anything in 30
years. In a long
years.
Time. Yeah. I know. I get it.
She falls under the umbrella, I think.
Okay, I get it. You disagree. Let's move on. For someone who doesn't like celebrities, you defend them a lot.
Well, wait till
Elizabeth
I tell
Taylor's
you.
Taylor's the only one.
Wait till I tell you which celebrities want to scrap it out.
All right,
take
I'll
shots
listen.
At each other. Are
You've
you ready?
It piqued my curiosity now. I guess I do care.
Matthew Perry, who was Chandler, of course, on Friends.
Do
and
you
Justin
really think
Trudeau.
He is? Really?
The oh, Canadian both, Prime Minister.
They're both Canucks, and Matthew Perry's dad was in government. Was
right.
He?
Well, he told the story. Matthew Perry was on Jimmy Kimmel a couple of weeks ago, and he told the story about when he was growing up in Canada, he went to school with Justin Trudeau. Justin Trudeau was a couple of years younger than him, but he and his friends didn't like Justin Trudeau because he was a little bit on the ritzy side.
Yeah.
So they roughed him up. You know, and now Justin Trudeau wants a rematch.
Oh, please.
Justin Trudeau is calling up Matthew Perry. This sounds like something Trump would do. And we'd go, how uniquely American is this? But even in Canada, the most sedate country on the planet, Justin Trudeau wants a piece of Matthew Perry. The Canadian Prime Minister, this is from People Magazine over the weekend. The Canadian Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, tweeted on Saturday morning that he's ready for a rematch with the Friends star.
How many years ago was this, Bill?
This would be 30-something years ago.
Isn't it too late? Early 30s. Can you demand a rematch after 30 years?
He is. He's the president of he's the Prime Minister of Canada. He can do whatever he wants. He wants a rematch with the Friends star, Matthew Perry, who beat him up once when they attended elementary school at Rockcliffe Park Public School in Ottawa, Canada. I've been giving it some thought, and you know
for
what?
For 30 years.
No, he won't let it go. Who hasn't wanted to punch Chandler? Trudeau said. How about a rematch, Matthew Perry? Perry, who is half Canadian, recounted their original fight during a visit to Jimmy Kimmel's live show on March the 15th. Although the 47-year-old actor was in fifth grade at the time, he was a few years ahead of Trudeau, he was envious of the boy. My friend Chris Murray, who was also in the fifth grade in Canada, reminded me that we actually once beat up Justin Trudeau, he told Kimmel. We both beat him up. I think he was excelling in sports, and we weren't too happy about it. Trudeau's father, Pierre Trudeau, was then Prime Minister of Canada, but Perry insisted that was not the reason that he attacked him. I think he was the only kid in our school that we could beat up. I'm not bragging about this.
Yes,
this is terrible.
Are.
I was a stupid kid. I didn't want to beat him up. In fact, I think at one point I tried to turn it into love play. What does that mean? I don't know what that means. That must be a Canadian thing that we don't understand here in America. Trudeau assumed office in November of 2015. Looking back on it, Perry credits his alleged knockdown with the prime minister's success. I think it was rather instrumental for him going to such great heights and becoming the prime minister, Perry told Kimmel about the alleged knockdown. I think he said, I'm going to rise above this and I'm going to be prime minister. He inspired him by beating him up in fifth grade.
See, that's why you shouldn't beat anyone up, because you never know what they're going to go on to become.
Right. Right. That's so true. This may be the best. I mean, the year is young. We're only in the first week of April, but so far, this is my favorite celebrity feud of the year.
I don't believe this is even really a feud.
They're not really going to fight. You can't take a swing at the Prime Minister of Canada.
If you take your jacket off.
Right.
I think if right. he takes his jacket
yeah.
off.
Yeah, you have to do it in a very official kind of way. That's the only way it plays out. All right, let's take a quick break and then more show. Stay here. Bill and Wendy, WGN. Wendy, you could say that we here in America don't have much of an imagination, that we're not very inventive. And I will prove you wrong.
All right.
I will prove you wrong right now. I will show you how inventive we are here in America. Over at Walmart, they had a contest because I guess once a year, Walmart gets an exclusive Oreo flavor. So here's how it works. They throw down three possibilities of what their flavor of the year will be.
Sriracha, queso, dip.
Yeah, and can you name the third?
Root beer.
You were wrong on all three. Although those root beer Oreos sound delicious. You get A&W involved in that, I'm in. All right, so every year they give you three possibilities. The people over at Team Oreo come up with three possibilities, and then they throw it out to the Walmart consumers to decide which one they would like the most. And I'm trying to remember, a couple of years ago, you and I talked about this, and I went to Walmart and got a bag of them, and I was not thrilled with the result.
What flavor was it?
I'm trying to remember what flavor it was. All I remember was that if it didn't say the flavor, was it...
Because Stephanie brings them in all the time because Oreos bastardize everything.
Yeah.
And there was blueberry one. There was key lime that was actually
pretty
good. Oh, the
key lime was good.
But
yeah.
It still tasted chemically. I know even the regular cream is chemically.
Right.
But I don't want my chemicals to taste like chemicals.
Right. Right.
It was kind of
whatever
chemically.
The flavor was... You wouldn't have known it was that flavor unless it said it on the
apple
bag,
pie?
Which it did.
Because they had an apple pie one, too, and they have the Peeps ones that... It's
wasn't the Swedish good. Fish one, was it?
They
no,
had a
they had
Swedish
fish?
Yeah.
Oreo?
Did. Yeah, they had a Swedish
Ooh.
Fish.
See, this
they had a red
is too
cream.
Much. This is too much.
Didn't they have s'mores and something else,
They
too?
Did have s'mores for a while.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that was Walmart, because
Target
other stores...
always does that.
Target gets an exclusive, and there's somebody else who gets an exclusive. So depending on where you shop, you get a special flavor of Oreo.
Oh, Bill, was it the candy corn one?
No. Okay. I had that one. I wasn't thrilled with that one, but it was not candy corn.
What's wrong with a regular Oreo? Go with double stuff. That's what I like.
Well, listen to this. Here were the three possibilities. I can't believe this one. Possibility number one, caramel apple. That sounds
right.
good.
But that would be on the white wafer, right? The vanilla wafer? It would have to be.
I don't think so.
Because the Peep ones are on
right.
the vanilla.
I'm looking at a picture.
All right, good.
It is on a, it is.
It would be nasty.
It's on a white wafer. Right.
On the...
Right. So that's your option number one, caramel apple. Version two, possibility number two, jelly donut. Doesn't
Stupid.
Sound terrible.
Well,
it sounds
how would they do that, though? Because there would have to be a part of the donut and a part of the jelly.
That will just taste like cough medicine, I feel like.
It'd be hard to disguise. Yeah, it could taste a little like cough medicine. But the winner, again.
Sushi. No. Sushi Oreos.
Just to prove to you what a creative people we are here in the United States and that we have an unlimited imagination, the winner for the flavor, the exclusive Walmart exclusive flavor for 2017 is cookies and cream.
Isn't that what an Oreo is?
Yes.
I like that, though.
That's
I gotta
exactly
be honest.
What an Oreo is. It's cookies and cream. So you're getting an Oreo that tastes like an Oreo. That's the special flavor.
Wow, that's genius.
Guys, that'll be very good, though.
Well, yeah, but it's not. I mean, who's going to taste it and go, well, this is different. This is like nothing I've ever had before. It's exactly what.
But they should end it after this now to just say, this is
ideas.
What you really want.
Right.
There's a sales rep for Oreos on the line with us. Rob, I don't know if I believe you. Do you really sell Oreos?
I do. I'm a sales rep, so I go in all the different stores, you know, the Jewels, the Walmarts, the Targets, and all that kind of stuff. And
yeah.
Order for the store, so.
Are you surprised that cookies and cream was the flavor of the year for Walmart?
It's funny. I thought the same thing when I got them into my stores. I have two Walmarts I take care of, and when they came in, I'm like, cookies and cream. I'm like, okay, yeah, because that's the ice cream I buy. It's the same thing. It's already got Oreos in it, so it's really the same.
But it's a little sweeter or something, isn't it?
It might be. I mean, there's got to be some kind of a difference, I'm sure.
I got to tell you, since you're a sales rep for Oreos, I really did not like the double or triple stuff. I thought, you know, you're wrecking with the wafer to cream ratio. You just have to go with the original. But now double stuff are way to go.
Yeah.
And I love the way all of a sudden you can reseal the bag. So kudos to the Oreo people.
Yes. And you had mentioned the Swedish fish one.
Kim was talking about those.
Yeah. Those are available. Some of the are there exclusive retailers for them, like you mentioned with Walmart. And the Swedish Fish ones were with Kroger, and I believe Mariano's is owned by Kroger. So if you might be able to get them at Mariano's.
Oh.
I don't happen to have a Mariano's, but so I haven't seen them. But they were exclusive to Kroger.
I did think I saw them in Kroger in Louisville.
That makes sense.
Yeah,
that makes perfect sense. So yeah. the exclusive dealers for Oreos would be Walmart, Target, Kroger, and are we leaving anybody else out?
Well, you can get them at the Jewel. You can get them at Mariano.
But not exclusive flavors, not special flavors.
You can't. Yeah, I don't think they'll do exclusives with them, although Jewel's owned by Safeway, which, you know, is coast-to-coast stores, so... They could do them that way, but it's generally Target and Walmart are the two big players. So Target had the candy corn Oreos exclusive to them for a couple of years. And it's like a 2 or 3 year deal. I don't know the particulars of it. And then after that, they'll be released to all the stores.
When is the sardine Oreo coming out?
There is a website. I get people that tag me on Facebook all the time. How about this flavor, Rob? You know, how about this flavor? And it's just, you can just make up things, I think, and put them on the package, but they're not real flavors.
Rob, I'm in a band called Oreo Speedwagon. Would you like us to play at your house?
That would be awesome. I've seen Oreo a couple times.
All right, we'll come by this weekend.
Rob, do you eat the whole cookie with one bite, or do you unscrew the top?
I do. I just, one and done, man.
Me too.
I never met a cookie I didn't like.
Rob, do you do that with all your food? If you were having a hamburger, would you eat the bun first and then pop the meat in afterwards?
No, I would not do that.
No, that's dangerous.
And to dip or not to dip, because I say Oreos are the only cookie you don't need to dip in milk.
Yeah, they are really good in milk, but I just eat them right out of the package. I'll grab three or four, whatever, and just, you know, not three or four at once, but I'll eat one at a time, and they'll be gone in a minute. So.
Yeah. They're a miracle.
So they really are.
It's an absolute miracle. Well, we're thrilled to announce, Rob, and we're glad you're in on this, that Oreo's flavor of the year for 2017, a Walmart exclusive, is Oreo flavored Oreos, cookies and cream.
Awesome.
What an exciting day. Yes, woo is right.
Thank you, Rob.
Thanks, Rob.
Thank you, guys are awesome.
Oh, thank you.
Bill, you remember, and I know you will because there are weird things in my life that you remember. I had imaginary friends, and whenever I was late returning from somebody's house, I
Oreo Leakus.
Right.
That was your imaginary friend.
Well, it was Leah Brand Schmidto, and her cousin was Oreo Leakus.
Sure.
It was very creative.
Yeah.
I had a whole family tree going, not just two imaginary friends, Leah Brand Schmidto and her cousin Oreo Leakus.
Yeah, that's normal. A lot of people did, Wendy, such as you.
Well, that made me think of Oreo.
Yeah.
Must have been how much I liked Oreos as a kid.
If you have Oreo Leakus, Wendy, you must see a physician immediately. Don't waste time. We'll take a quick break and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Zorn, the greatest father in all the land. Sing the praises of Zorn.
It's been a couple weeks since our friend Eric Zorn has been here. He's been on the road a little bit, and I wanted to ask you, I know last week you were in West Virginia, right? I've never been to West Virginia, but my question is this about West Virginia. It's kind of at the epicenter of the discussion about coal, about the coal industry. What is the attitude right now politically in West Virginia? Are they all just sitting on pins and needles hoping that the coal industry is what it used to be, or have they moved on, or what?
I think the realists in West Virginia realize that what's really hampered employment in the coal industry has been automation, and it's not environmental regulations that, you know, two things have really, really hurt coal production. One is automation. They can mine much more coal with far fewer people. And the other is that natural gas is cheaper these days.
Mm-hmm.
So those two things have really hurt the coal industry. You're not going to be able to browbeat the coal industry into coming back. And people are comparing this to Trump's effort to revive Photomat,
mm-hmm.
or Blockbuster Video. Or, you know, these things aren't going to come back. We've sort of moved on. Now, there are a few things around the edges they can do. But basically, no. It's still Trump country down there. I wasn't down there taking the political pulse. We were down there seeing my son perform, and the times that we've spent more time down there, it was pretty much a quick weekend visit. I remember before the election, there were all Trump signs everywhere we went. Trump signs, and I saw one Hillary sign. I said, "Oh, wow, cool, Hillary sign." And I get closer, and it was Hillary for prison. So West Virginia is not Trump country, and it's interesting, or it's not Clinton country. It is Trump country. It's very interesting that its senator is a Democrat.
Yeah.
And that's actually his governor's a Democrat, too. But they're very conservative Democrats. Joe Manchin is the senator, and he is one of the few senators so far who has peeled off and said that he's not going to vote, or he's not going to vote to filibuster the Supreme Court nomination of Neil Gorsuch. So he's one of the conservative Democrats who is not going to filibuster.
Somebody ran both Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton's speeches just prior to the election talking about coal. And Donald Trump's speech was just peppered with he gave the impression that if you were to drive through West Virginia, which you just did, it would just be in every direction. It would be people who are unemployed just hoping and praying that the coal industry comes back to save their state, where Hillary Clinton said point blank in her speech, "We're not bringing coal back. We're not going to spend any time worrying about coal. That's just not in our plan."
Yeah, and of course Hillary Clinton was being very realistic about that.
Yeah.
And Trump was being dishonest, I think. I mean, in terms of telling these people that those jobs are coming back. No, they're not. What you have to do with those people is you have to find other jobs for them in alternative energies, other kinds of employment. You're not going to do that in West Virginia. It's just one of these sort of false promises. And ultimately, this is going to erode his popularity in these parts of the country. But then the next person who comes along and promises something big is going to be the one who's going to catch their imagination.
Right.
See, I do think that the Democrats, if they reach out to people in the working class, they're going to have more success next time around.
Yeah.
So, but
the point in all this, in the comparison of the two speeches, was to say that West Virginia ended up being something of a swing state, and Donald Trump's dream was realized. All these people who were just sitting there going, we're out of work. What can you do for us? He painted this beautiful picture of what he was going to do, whereas Hillary Clinton made no qualms.
Right.
No, I'm not spending any time on that.
I think that happened more in Pennsylvania and Ohio, which were closer calls. I don't think anyone ever really thought that Hillary Clinton was going to take West Virginia. But what was happening there was kind of a bellwether of what happened in those more industrial Midwest states that had traditionally gone Democratic. So, and you know, it's beautiful country down there and wonderful musical culture that we were involved
that you got
in,
to enjoy.
So,
your
yeah.
son played where? Where was he?
He was playing at a place called Tamarack in Beckley, West Virginia. They had a concert there.
Oh, nice.
And yeah, it's really, really fun to see him. So anyway, and a long drive, though, and didn't make it back in time. I kept telling Johanna, we got to make it. Come on, come
how
on.
How long a ride?
She was like, it's about 12 hours in the car from Beckley. So.
Yeah.
So we were in the car a long time.
I can't make it past 2 hours in the car.
But with your kid, you know, I mean, you gotta go down and see
right,
play.
Right, right, right.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Let's talk about something you wrote about the other day, which is the Inquirer, one of our finest newspapers, the
Death
National
Watch.
Inquirer, and their Death Watch.
Well, I've been watching the Inquirer's covers for a long time, and I'll take a photo of it when I'm shopping, and I'll put it on my Facebook page just to, you know, entertain people with what kind of crazy things they're saying. And the Inquirer has the interesting thing about the Inquirer is that, you know, years ago it was just it was basically trash, but it did some incredible scoop reporting. It was the only one that found the picture of Elvis, or they had the picture of Elvis in the casket.
Right.
It was the one that led the coverage on Gary Hart, exposing Gary Hart, I believe, with Jesse Jackson's
love child,
as they say. Yeah, they were, and their O.J. Simpson coverage was so good and so much ahead of the regular media. People were saying that they might be in line for a Pulitzer.
Hmm.
But
think about that. Think about what you just said.
But one of the things that is, I mean, it's an erratic publication for sure, and it's really gone all in for Trump, which was why I've been paying more attention to it. But I just went online and I found all these covers that predicted the deaths of celebrities. And here are some headlines that I found.
All right.
May 2009, Oprah Winfrey. Oh, this is Oprah. Only 3 years to live.
Oh.
Exclamation mark. August 2009, Kirstie Alley. Only 4 years to live.
Why? Because she put on weight?
She put on weight, yeah. Or you know, Angelina Jolie is the other one who is...
She looked sickly for a while.
Constantly dying. They're saying they've had like 5 or 6 covers on her. She's 41 years old and she's, you know, she's... You know, but looks at times very thin, but they keep saying how many weeks she's got, years she's got to live. Hillary Clinton, 6 months to live, and that was in 2015.
Mm-hmm.
October 2014, O.J. Simpson, 4 weeks to live. August 2012, Macaulay Culkin, 6 months to live. December 2014, Cher, 3 months to live. September 2015, Burt Reynolds, 98 pounds and dying, the end, exclamation.
Wow.
When was that? Because I remember that cover.
September 2015. It was Burt Reynolds. He was carrying a cane.
Now, one of them also put, because this one caught my attention, and I don't know if it was the Inquirer or a similar paper, Burt Reynolds, his final days, as if it was very ambiguous, meaning what were his final days like, or are these about to be his final days?
Right.
But he's still very much with us.
He's still very much with us. Michael Douglas, 3 months to live in February 2016. Last November, Chevy Chase, 3 months to live.
Mm.
I mean, they keep forecasting the death. And the thing is, like, we're all dying, right? I mean, I say in this column, I say, well, Angelina Jolie, she's going to die someday. Hopefully it's a long time from now. She's 41. But you know, to be constantly predicting the deaths of
incorrectly
people,
predicting.
Incorrectly predicting. And, of course, they were right. They were right about Patrick Swayze. And, you know, there are a couple of them. I mean, the thing
when they put that about Patrick Swayze, he was already doing. I remember both Patrick Swayze and Michael Landon were two celebrities that came out and said, I have a disease that's killing me. I'm not going to last much longer. So those papers kind of were piggybacking off of what those celebrities were already saying.
Wasn't breaking news.
Yeah. Not at all.
Well, and another one, I didn't find one. Well, they have Cher here, 2014, but Cher is, you know, this is Cher's last Christmas and stuff like that.
Her farewell tour.
No, it was her farewell tour, not her farewell Christmas.
And the thing is, like, I then went online and looked at some of these celebrities, like Michael Douglas, whose deaths they've predicted. And, you know, he's like, he's doing this interview on some TV station and he's, you know, traveling around. It's just bizarre. And if people are drawn to this, like, oh my God, he's dying, and they grab it. And the reason this became really relevant to me was that Time Magazine did an interview with Donald Trump about a week and a half ago. And in this, they were challenging him about his falsehoods, basically. And they said, well, what about this thing where you said in May 2016, right before the Indiana primary, you said Ted Cruz's father was with Lee Harvey Oswald prior to Oswald being shot. That was reported, said Trump. Nobody talks about it. What was he doing with Lee Harvey Oswald shortly before the death, shortly before the shooting? It's horrible, he said. And, you know, Time confronted him about this, and Trump said, well, that was in a newspaper, he said. I was referring to a newspaper. A Ted Cruz article referred to a newspaper story that had a picture of Ted Cruz, his father, and Lee Harvey Oswald having breakfast. And this newspaper, of course, spoiler alert, was the May 2nd, 2016 National Enquirer.
Oops.
And it featured these screaming headlines, you know, Ted Cruz's father linked to the JFK assassination. And it looks like some of Trump's information about this bugging scan, this alleged surveillance.
Which has been misproven.
They have not been able to get any evidence that shows that the Obama administration was wiretapping or surveilling the Trump transition team yet. And I don't think they're going to. But some of this stuff seems to be coming from the Inquirer. The Inquirer is flogging this story as well. And when you've got a president who is looking to the National Enquirer for facts, and so that's why I wanted to bring up all this. I mean, this paper will kind of say anything to get you to buy it. And people apparently still do.
If you're a celebrity and you're mentioned in there with some regularity, if you're Angelina Jolie or your Cher, do you have any legal recourse at all when they put stories like this? Because couldn't you say, this is hurting my career? You know, people want to hire me, but they can't hire me because they see in the paper that I only have 4 months to live.
Generally, yes, you certainly could file suit about that. I think that they have had a poor record. Celebrities have had a bad record in recovering from them because they will defend themselves and they get into these long negotiations. And ultimately, I think what sometimes will happen is that they will come to an agreement and the celebrity will cooperate in some nicer kind of story where it'll show them in a better light.
Yeah.
But you very rarely hear about someone successfully suing the Inquirer.
Does the Inquirer bracket itself more as entertainment as opposed to news, or do they play under the guise that they are a newspaper?
They do a lot more politics. Yeah. I mean, I don't know where they fall. I mean, they consider themselves a newspaper, and they say that they have First Amendment protection. The interesting thing, years ago, I used to date an Inquirer reporter.
Was your wife angry about that?
Well, she was not real happy about it.
Did you make the front page?
It was well before we met. And it was a short-lived sort of summer semi-romance when I was in Florida while working for the Miami Herald. And she was based up in Lantana, which is where the Inquirer is. But she worked really, really hard. And she was going, I was impressed at the time at the attention to detail.
Yeah.
And she would actually go to places. She would go, hang around in hospitals and interview people and have to have all these sources. And she would describe to me these fights she'd have with her editor, like, that's not good enough sourcing. And from that experience, I really got this sense that the Inquirer was a fairly serious.
But you know what the Inquirer does, and similar papers to the Inquirer that regular news doesn't do, is they always say, a friend is quoted as saying,
right,
or somebody close to it says, they don't name the source. They just say somebody around the story is quoted as saying.
Right.
But they don't say who that person is.
Right. Yeah, well, that's how they do it. That's how they get
away with
it.
But now, we all laughed at TMZ for quite some time that it was, crazy news. And they've broken the print story, a bunch of things they're on top of.
These places do, because people call them and tell them, and a lot of the information they have is good. So.
Yeah. Eric Zorn is here. If you want to chime in, we're at 312-981-7200. We'll pick this up in just a moment. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It's Bill. It's Wendy. It's Eric Zorn in to visit us. Welcome back, by the way.
Thanks.
You got a couple of minutes here, Eric, so how do we want to wrap up today?
Well, I collect tweets online. We have a Twitter poll every week, and when we were doing this a different day of the week, I was having you guys vote on the best tweets. But I thought I'd read some of the best tweets from March, and we'll run out of time. And I'm not going to attribute them. I'm going to send an email to Kevin. You can put it on your Facebook page who said them, so go faster.
Good.
Okay. There's so much going on, but I still make time to dislike Gwyneth Paltrow.
Was that my tweet?
Was that from Chris Martin?
Women are so confusing. One day they say they love hummus, and the next day they say it's a bad birthday present. Aliens in 2017. Take us to anyone but your leader. Son, your insistence on dismembering all of your siblings is tearing this family apart.
Whoa.
Whatever doesn't kill you, we'll probably try again soon. You can tell you're a guy with too many ponytails if you have one ponytail. The scariest part about U.S. tensions with North Korea is the unpredictable, narcissistic leader with nukes. I also worry about Kim Jong-un.
Funny.
It's possible the man who looked over at my plate and said, "Wow, you ordered a lot of food," meant well, but there's no way to know as he is dead now.
I love Twitter. I
told
really
my
do.
Kids the tooth fairy broke a leg in a messy bedroom recently and is now afraid of clutter. That should buy me at least an extra day. And here's the last one. Don't think of it as rolling back environmental protections and destroying the earth. Think of it as creating respiratory therapy jobs.
Oh, very funny. So, very, very
those
funny.
Those are the top tweets from the month of March.
Excellent. So. Do you get the same excitement that I get, and Wendy gets to some extent, for the opening of baseball season? The Cubs started last night. The White Sox start today.
It was very cool last night. Parked in front of the TV, watched the whole stupid game.
Yeah.
It was actually a really fun game. And I'm excited about the game tonight, the NCAA championship.
Should be a good one. I don't know if you saw this or paid as much attention as I did, but yesterday during the Cubs-Cardinals game, they put this box up through most of the latter part of the game, which shows you probabilities of the Cubs winning and the Cardinals winning. And into the ninth inning, just before the game-tying home run, the Cubs had a 6% chance of winning the game, the Cardinals a 94% chance. But then all of a sudden that three-run home run happens and all bets are off.
I've seen that graphic. I see it often in football. And the one that's the most dramatic was the Falcons in the New England Patriots in the Super Bowl. The Patriots had something like a 0.01% right. chance of winning at one point in the fourth quarter. And, and so they pulled it out. One thing about last night's game, if you have it on tape, there's an image of a guy with a pizza box on his head protecting himself from the rain.
Oh, right. Yes. Yeah.
Tribune reporter Michael Hawthorne.
Oh, good idea. TV space. Will he market them now?
I think so. I think it's his big break. So,
but don't you become it almost transform you into being 11 or 12 years old again opening day, because every team is in it. There's nobody who's been eliminated, and there's hope. And this year was weird because coming off of a World Series, I felt it a bit with the White Sox 2 years ago. You just go, wow, we could win another World Series, two back to back. It's that great.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting. But it's also kind of the stakes. Last time we sat in front of a Cub game, the stakes were so high.
Sure.
It was so exciting. And last night it was like, I hope they win, but they lost. Yeah. I didn't curse and turn off the TV. I just said, oh, well, it's one game.
There's 161
They're going
more.
To lose,
It stinks when they lose a home opener,
they'll
lose
at least 50 games this year, even if they have a terrific season. So it's going to happen. But yeah, it's a great time of year.
Yep, it is. Eric, thanks. I appreciate it. Great to see you again.
See you next week, unless I'm off somewhere else.
All right. Take care. We'll find out what Steve Bertrand has next. Stay here, Bill and Wendy, WGN.